from your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, November 23rd, 2025, as we bring you this new episode. In this show, MLB.com's Jim Callis will be joining me to recap the Arizona Fall League action and how the White Sox prospects fared, why Raiden Montgomery and Hagen Smith look to be on track to join the big league club sooner than later, what to make of Sam Antonacci, and Jim also answers some of our Sox Machine supporter questions. Speaking of our supporters, as always, thank you for continuing to subscribe to Sox Machine. We just got our media credential approval for the winter meetings down in Orlando. Jim, James, and myself will be reporting all the White Sox and MLB happenings from Florida, and that's made possible because of you. So again, thank you for subscribing to Sox Machine. If you enjoy our work and would like to unlock access to all of our coverage, for example, James just recently interviewed the White Sox new hitting coach, visit SoxMachine.com to sign up for either a monthly or annual subscription. On the MLB transaction front, the non-tender deadline came and went. The White Sox had some surprises. Outfielder Derek Hill was signed to a split contract. If he plays in the major leagues in 2026, he'll make $900,000. If Hill plays down in Charlotte, he'll make $450,000. So Hill figures to be part of the White Sox outfield plans at least to start 2026. Meanwhile, Mike Tauchman was let go. It's a tough decision because Tauchman is a good offensive presence, but the hamstring and knee injuries are a concern. But the White Sox also cut Tim Elko, which is a bit bizarre and requires follow-up because at the very least he could have played in Charlotte because the Knights still need players, and left-handed reliever Cam Boozer was also cut. Both Elko and Boozer had several years of control remaining, so those decisions are a bit odd for a White Sox organization hurting for depth. Or maybe Chris Getz really wants to continue stripping this organization down to the frame. The White Sox 40-man roster is now down to 34 players, giving Getz plenty of space to add new faces. And that's their biggest draw for free agents. You want an opportunity to play every day? Boy, do the White Sox have a job for you! Even though the White Sox won't be big spenders this offseason, they'll be busy, which makes us busy at Sox Machine and gives us a chance to create more content for all of you. One day, it'll be meaningful transactions, like the trade the New York Mets and Texas Rangers made on Sunday, as the Mets are sending outfielder Brandon Nimmo to Texas, and the Rangers are sending Marcus Semien to Queens. What a wild and wonderful trade that is for two veterans who struggled in 2025, now get a change of scenery. If Semien bounces back, the Mets' middle infield is Francisco Lindor and Marcus Semien. That's pretty good. Joining us now on the Sox Machine Podcast is one of our best friends of the show. He was recently in Arizona to catch the Arizona Fall League, and I always look forward to asking about his insights regarding the White Sox prospects that play in the Arizona Fall League. It's Jim Callis of MLB.com. Hello, Jim. Thanks for joining the show again, and great to chat with you before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, Josh. Always glad to be here. The White Sox, I will admit, I did not do an official count. I know they had three prospects on our top 30 Arizona Fall League prospects list. And I want to say, I feel like they were the only team with three. Don't hold me to that. But then the crazy thing was, those were the only three prospects from the Glendale Desert Dogs to make the top 30, and they were the three White Sox guys. So
is that a not good thing for the Glendale Desert Dogs this season in Arizona?
It was not. I mean, the White Sox contingent was good, so that part was all good. Yeah. But they went 11-16 with the second worst record in the league. And we noted when we were doing the broadcast of the championship game, Mike Farron and I, another great Chicago guy, It was Peoria versus Surprise, and Surprise has been in the championship game 6 years in a row. But either, like, your eyebrows are going to raise even more. Hey, I'll give you a quick quiz. So Peoria, if you say Peoria or Surprise, Javelinas Saguaros, How many consecutive years has one of those teams been in the championship game?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. You said six for one. I'm going to say nine.
16. 16. And what's crazy is before the pandemic, like this year, all six teams made the playoffs. Before that, 21 through 24, two played their six teams in the fall league. Two, the number two and three seeds played each other to play number one. But before that, the first 11 years of that streak, it was East Division versus West Division. And Peoria and Surprise are in the same division. So, like, they both couldn't be in for most of those years. And anyway, this is a roundabout way of saying Glendale obviously not getting to the championship game too often. And was not a great Glendale team this year either.
Before getting into the White Sox and getting to the meat of the Arizona Fall League, I am curious because you're also well known for the Golden Retrievers. With it being Thanksgiving, how difficult is it preventing the Goldens from eating any of the Thanksgiving food?
Oh, no, we keep them out because it's like I am perhaps not as vehement as Darren McGavin in A Christmas Story, but we would have problems if the Bumpus Dogs came and stole our Thanksgiving or Christmas turkey. My wife is highly organized. She's a great cook. She's very highly organized about what needs to go in the oven, when, and it's all highly organized. So I hope I've not cursed myself, but we do not have problems with the dogs getting into the Thanksgiving food. And hopefully that will continue.
So with the Arizona Fall League, looking at it as a whole, we talked about how Glendale wasn't a very strong team despite having excellent White Sox prospects, which we'll talk about in a moment. But for the overall league itself, Jim, how does this year's class of players rank in previous classes? Was this a strong class of prospects?
I feel like not really. Like, there's always prospects. And if in the history of the league, two-thirds of these guys play in the big leagues, like going back to 1992 when the league started. So you're going to see a lot of future big leaguers. And I think we talked about this. Since the pandemic, I think teams have been even more conservative about what – it's hard to send pitchers to the fall league because if your guy's healthy all year, you're not going to send him. If he was hurt and it was serious, you're not going to send him because he's hurt. If, you know, he's a guy on the Rule 5 bubble, you probably don't want to send him and advertise him to the 29 other organizations. So from a pitching standpoint, you essentially get a lot of guys who are older relievers, you know, like 24-year-old guys in Class A. Now, the White Sox were an exception. They sent some good players. Or pitchers who were hurt but not too – like, Hagen Smith is a good example. We'll talk about him. Like, I don't know that he was technically hurt, but he was on the developmental list, you know, working on mechanics. And so I think he had a minor – I can't remember. But anyway, he kind of is the rare profile of, like, it's a top 100 guy – who threads the needle of a guy you could send there. And even then, a lot of teams won't send it. So I feel like the pitching, especially since the pandemic, has not been as good. I do think the pitching, in part because of Hagen Smith and a couple other guys, was a slightly better. This year was weird because of just at the beginning of the season, they didn't assign as many top 100 prospect position players to the list. And then Josue DePaula never made it. He had a hamstring injury that never healed up. And there were a couple, like Sebastian Walcott hurt his shoulder two games in. Somebody else got banged up and left. So I think by the time the end of the season rolled around, I think we only had eight top 100 position players in the league, which is a little bit low. So I felt like looking at the post-pandemic years, I felt like the pitching was a little bit better, but I felt the position players were a little bit down. But all that said, you're going to see, I don't know how many guys counting replacements played in the big leagues. Played in the fall league this year, but I don't know, it's probably like 275. So we probably had like 180 future big leaguers in the fall league this year. So, so you're still going to see talented players. I just feel like it was down a little bit, because guys were banged up.
The number one player in your top 30 prospects from the Arizona Fall League in 2025, Jim, was Kevin McGonigal of Detroit. He's the number two overall prospect in MLB's top 100. He had a big Arizona Fall League, and I wonder, for White Sox fans, could we see McGonigal with the Detroit Tigers in 2026?
Yes, he could. It's like, okay, we knew he was really good. He's number two on our top 100 prospects list, so we knew he was a guy. And I actually was more impressed by him after watching him play than I was before. And not just watching him play, like he's, I don't even know how to describe this well. He's got a presence about him, and it's not, oh, he's cocky. I mean, he's confident without being cocky. He just has this presence about him where it's like he's always hit, probably always will hit. He's just very comfortable with himself. It's not cockiness. He's really good. And like for a guy who I think just turned 21 right before the fall league, very impressive. His favorite player growing up was Chase Utley. And I see a lot of Chase Utley in him. I think he's probably going to be a second baseman. He wants to stick it short and show people he can do that. He played mostly third, but he's just that kind of hitter. And it's funny, like, I don't know if you watched the Fall Stars game, which is their version of an All-Star game. And I think he went 0-2 with a walk, but he even did a couple things in that game that made me think of Chase Utley. He was playing shortstop. Anderson Burrito was pitching. They had a runner on. It was early in the game, so the score was close. It wound up being a one-run game. And ball went off Burrito's glove. I think it was Seaver King who hit it, who can really, really run. And McGonagall just, like, he was on the play. Like, it's one of those plays, if you waited even a split second to react, you weren't making the play. But he rushed in, barehanded the ball, threw first, got Seaver King out by step, and, you know, prevented the inning from going anywhere. And then in the bottom half, I guess it was the third inning, he draws a leadoff walk. And ball four was, like, really wide of the plate. And so he just busted it out of the box and never slowed down and went to second. Goes to third on a ground out, scores on the fly ball. And they wound up winning the game by one run. And yeah, okay, it's Arizona Fall League All-Stars game. It's not, you know, seventh game of the World Series. But it's just like, man, you know, this guy's doing the little things to try to win a game. You know, it's on TV. But like, again, it's Saturday night. I don't know how many people stayed home on Saturday night to like, oh, I got to watch a Fall-Stars game. Like, it wasn't a huge audience necessarily. And he's just busting it. So he reminded me of Chase Utley. It was funny. I ran into Tony Vitello, who's now the manager of the Giants, who I've known forever, former coach of Tennessee. I've known him back to when he was pitching coach at Missouri. And we were watching McGonagall, the game where I ran into him, we saw McGonagall. And he said McGonagall reminded him of a left-handed hitting Alex Bregman. And I was like, yeah, wow. I could see that too. Kind of maybe not the same chip on his shoulder. Like Alex has like the perpetual chip on his shoulder to drive him. But I was like, I'll buy that one too. I just think he's going to be really, really good. It'll be curious to see what they do, the Tigers, because Gleyber Torres is coming back. Javi Baez went from making the All-Star game, like everybody thought his career was dead. He makes the All-Star game, and then he was about as worst a hitter as there was as an everyday player after the All-Star break. You got Zach McKinstry, who's always been kind of a personal sneaky favorite of mine. But, like, what is Zach McKinstry really? You got Cole Keith, who's, you know, former top 25 prospects still figuring. So I don't know how they're going to fit all these guys into the same infield, but Kevin McGonagall, yeah, White Sox fans are going to probably see more of him than they're going to want to for a long time. Like, he's really, really, really good. And like, I like Max Clark. Max Clark is more, they were in the same draft, those two guys, as well as Max Anderson, who was the best hitter performance wise in the Fall League this year, all in the same draft. Max Clark is more famous, and Max Clark is really good. Mm-hmm. Kevin McGonagall is like a tier or two. Like, I just think Kevin McGonagall is going to be that guy who hits, you know, 300 a lot with 25 homers and, you know, plays like a scrappy guy, plays like a Sam Antonacci, even though he's Kevin McGonagall. I just was like enthralled with that guy. So I'm not ready to move Connor Griffin out of the number one spot in the top 100, but I don't know, like, twist my arm a little bit, maybe, and maybe I'd think about it. But Kevin McGonagall is really, really good.
Well, coming at number two in the top 30 is a White Sox prospect, and that's White Sox outfielder Brady Montgomery. What did you like watching Montgomery in the Arizona Fall League, Jim?
It's funny. So, like, Kevin McGonagall, I'd seen Kevin McGonagall before, but I wound up being more impressed. Like, I mean this in a good way, Brayman. Like, so Kevin McGonagall was clear number one. I didn't even have to think about that. I knew he was number one prospect. Honestly, I thought Bray Montgomery was the clear number two prospect in the league. And I didn't think it was – I mean, you could argue other guys, but it was pretty easy number two. And in a good way, Bray Montgomery didn't surprise me at all. He was Bray Montgomery. Like, it's power, it's right field arm strength, you know, patient approach at the plate. You know, he's actually – I don't know if the numbers held up in the fall league, but you know, the big question we talked about this coming in when they traded for him was, man, for switch hitter, he just did not hit lefties well in college. Like, even the point where some guys were wondering, evaluators, should he give this up? Like, should he just bat left-handed? You know, and you get the whole, when you're a switch hitter, you obviously get a lot more at-bats lefty against righty than righty against lefty. Anyway, I didn't look at his AFL numbers, but I think his regular season numbers were pretty much even. So like, I thought that was a positive for season, but he was just Brady Montgomery. Like, talk to him. Like, I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to him yet. Like,
yep.
Great guy. Like, I think I told you, like, my go-to line when they made the Crochet trade was, not only did I thought they get talented players, but I really thought, and I do believe, the Kyle Teal and Brady Montgomery will be the culture setters for the White Sox team going forward. He's just very even keeled. Like I said, I've seen him for a while. He just was Brady Montgomery. So absolutely nothing surprised me about Brady Montgomery. He just went out there. Like, he was recovering, I think, from a minor injury. So he didn't play a little bit at the beginning of the season. But he just went out there. He hit 366. Yeah, I mean, and we say this all the time. You got to take the fall league numbers with a grain of salt, because, like I was talking about the pitching, you know, Cubs fans are excited about Owen Ayers, who was the breakthrough player of the year. And like, okay, he had a great fall league. I mean, he is something, but like, the guy was 24 years old in single A this year. And like, Nelson Velasquez was MVP of the fall league a few years ago. James Trances was MVP of the fall league a couple of years ago. Like, everybody puts up huge numbers, but he had a 527 on base, 634 slug. He just looked really good. Like, I think we're going to see him at some point in 2026. And like I said, I meant this in a very positive way. Nothing surprised me about Brady Montgomery. He was the Brady Montgomery I've always seen. Like, he was just that guy. He's just very consistent player, very consistent person. So yeah, like, I have nothing new to report on Brady Montgomery other than he's his usual good self. And I just think he's that classic right fielder.
I was going to say, you mentioned that we could see Brady Montgomery in 2026 for the White Sox. I don't know if you have seen what the White Sox current outfield configuration is, Jim, because we're recording this.
I have not. I'm guessing it's not good.
We're recording this podcast, listeners, on November 22nd, the day after the non-tender deadline. And the White Sox non-tendered more players than they tendered. They gave Derek Hill a split contract, so that's not even a guarantee that he's going to make the Major League roster. And Chris Getz has already said that Andrew Benintendi is going to spend more time at DH than outfield in 2026. Ooh. Because of his Achilles. So right now it's Luis Robert Jr., Everson Pereira, and Derek Hill with some Brooks Baldwin Ooh. Mixed in. So that's why I have to ask you, like, how close is Brady Montgomery? Because unless Jerry Reinsdorf has a change of heart and they go out and they sign a Cody Bellinger or Kyle Tucker,
I'm gonna guess
the
no.
White Sox need some outfield help quickly.
He hasn't played a lot in Double-A. Like, there's no reason to rush him because they're not going to contend next year. I think it's going to be like Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro start the year probably in Charlotte, and then the player will tell us when he's ready. And it could be May 1st. It could be June 1st. I think we'll see him before the All-Star break. You could get into the whole.
Okay.
Like, obviously, if you make the opening roster, you're up early enough, like first couple weeks of season, get a full year of service time and you win Rookie of the Year, then the White Sox get a pick versus, like, which is incentive, but those are also long odds for any player, versus, hey, theoretically, if we keep him in the minors for a couple months, then we get an extra year of control on him. So, you know, when you're non-contender, I think you have to kind of consider those things too. But like, I my guess is it'll be that Teal, Caro start the year in Charlotte, and then we'll let him dictate when he's ready. I mean, I guess that was same thing with Colson Montgomery. It just took him a little bit longer, but like, I think that'll be my guess is based on this front office that'll probably be the plan. And, you know, to their credit, like, they called some of those guys up pretty early last year, you know, even though, like, I don't necessarily know that they pushed everybody's service time clock back necessarily. But anyway, in any case, I think that's what it'll be. And we could see him very soon. Well, I don't think he'd make the opening day roster, but who knows? Like what you just described is not very pretty.
Number five in the top 30 is Hagen Smith, who looked much better in Arizona than we saw from Hagen Smith with the Birmingham Barons in 2025. It appears that he did a better job of cutting down his walk rate. What did you like about Smith's performance in Arizona, Jim?
Exactly what you said. Now, granted, it's a small sample size. So he pitched 14 innings. But I am encouraged because I'm sure you heard the same thing. Like, and we, you know, so they get Hagen Smith, number five overall pick in the draft. And it's funny because I think a lot of White Sox fans are probably like, oh man, Jack Caglione's sitting right there. How do we not take Jack Caglione? I don't know what to make of Jack Caglione right now. Like, his, like, we always talked about how he chases pitches, and big league pitchers really took advantage of that. You know, the one that they may regret a little bit, and not as a reflection, is J.J. Weatherholt. Because J.J. Weatherholt looks like he's going to be pretty good. But in any case, but Hagen Smith, okay, you know, the guy set the NCAA Division I record for strikeouts per nine innings. He's left-handed. It's wipeout stuff. And then at the beginning of the season, the mechanics, like, he was struggling with his mechanics. He wasn't throwing strikes. And, like, felt like his velocity was down a mile or two. Felt like, you know, you have a good slider when your slider isn't at its sharpest, but it's still pretty much a plus pitch. Like, it was, he had a good slider, but it wasn't like, oh, wipeout slider, these guys have no chance. And it seemed like at the end of the year in the postseason, he started looking more like the Hagen Smith White Sox were hoping for and their fans were hoping for. And that's what he looked like in Arizona. Like, he sat in the, again, it's 14 innings, it's shorter stints. So we're not like, okay, put him in the rotation, he's winning the Cy Young next year. But it was mid 90s, he was up to 98. The slider just devastated hitters. He, when he did allow contact, he struck out like a batter and a half per inning. When he did allow contact, nobody really lifted the ball. I think he was second in the league in ground ball ratio, and he threw a decent amount of strikes. So, I mean, the White Sox, I haven't tried to think about this way, probably had about as encouraging a fall league as any organization, because we just talked about Brayden Montgomery. And, like, good news, Brayden Montgomery was exactly who we thought. You know, Brayden Montgomery is going to be that, you know, athletic right fielder hitting 25 or 30 homers a year. And then Hagen Smith looked like the guy who was Hagen Smith at Arkansas, you know, that the White Sox took number five overall. So, again, I'm not ready to pronounce it just based on 14 innings. Hagen Smith is 100% back to being Arkansas Hagen Smith. But based on the way into the season and based on how he looked in Arizona, it looked really good.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to have to set expectations, at least early in Hagen Smith's career in the majors, Jim, that yes, he can be a bit frustrating for White Sox fans because he might walk four batters in five or six innings of work. But to your point, and even looking at his AA stats, he's hard to make contact against. And it's even harder to hit for power against Hagen Smith. So I could see some future stat lines in 2026 when he's pitching for the White Sox, Jim, where he goes only five innings, he walks four, but he only allows three hits and strikes out 10.
It's and funny. I was just going to go like five. I was going to say like five innings, three hits, two or three runs, four walks, like nine or 10 strikeouts. Like, I was exactly saying, you are going to see those lines. And obviously you need to throw throwing strikes is a hallmark for success as a pitcher. And his stuff is not as otherworldly as Jacob Mizorowski's. But like Mizorowski, there goes Goldens. Jacob Mizorowski, when you're trying to figure out, like, is he a starter, is he a reliever? My point with Mizorowski always, and I still don't exactly know the answer to that Jacob Mizorowski question. With Mizorowski, and it's going to be with Hagen Smith too, their bar they need to clear for control is lower than your typical starter, because you can't hit them. Like you mentioned, even in AA, when Hagen Smith is walking 56 guys in 75 innings, which is way too much, he only gave up 42 hits, like, and he struck out 108 guys. Like, so he still has more strikeouts than base runners. He still had a 3.5 ERA. And like you said, he may like run up some pitch counts because he's walking guys, and it may take him a little while to get to where they want to be, you know, 27, 28. But like exactly that, like, he's one of the guys who I think if he could walk, I don't know, like a guy every other inning, he's hard enough to hit, but that's probably enough for him to succeed as a starter. But it's that same type of thing. And he showed, I mean, it was six walks in 14 innings, and guys didn't really touch him in the fall league. So I thought that was very, very encouraging for him to do what he did.
Now, number 21 in the top 30 is Sam Antenacci, who led the Arizona Fall League in runs scored and total hits with 28 while batting .378. And a 505 on base percentage. Again, it's the Arizona Fall League. But Jim, when it comes to Sam Antenacci, I don't know what to make of him. I am a big proponent of, I need to see some type of power from you, reliable power in the minor leagues before I get too crazy about your chances of reaching the major leagues. That's why with Caleb Bonnemer this year, I was pleasantly surprised with his progression, and he is on the younger side at age 20. But I don't know what to make of Sam Antonacci as far as his future with the White Sox. Is he a left-handed version of a player like Chase Meidroth?
Yeah, that's a good comp. And I'd say that is kind of what he is. So Sam, you can make the case, might be the best pure hitter in the White Sox system. Like, guys who saw him, he's not a big name. He's a fifth-round pick. He was a junior college player, D2 junior college player of the year at Heartland Community College here in Illinois. Spent a year at Coastal Carolina, but wasn't like he was an SEC famous guy for 3 years. So a lot of the pro scouts that I talked to had not seen Sam Antonacci before the fall league because he just wasn't that kind of high exposure type of player. But everybody noted, love the way he plays the game, love the way he has good at-bats and makes contact. And the consensus was he hits good pitching. It wasn't that he was just feasting on NFL guys who weren't performing. He hits good pitching. He's hit 298 career in the minor leagues through season plus since they drafted him in the fifth round, 24. But he's kind of in that Chase Meidroth, Brooks Baldwin mode, where it's not lateral tools, but some of the tools is greater than the individual tools. I don't think you're going to see a lot of power out of Sam Antonacci. He's probably 5 to 10 homer guy. And he makes contact because he's not a big power guy and he makes contact so easily. He has a good eye at the plate, but I think it's going to be more in terms of if you say taking walks, he's probably going to be average. I don't think he's going to walk as much in the big leagues as he has in the minor leagues. And, you look, he had 48 steals this year in the minors. He's probably a fringy runner. He just is a really aggressive runner. He's a really instinctive runner. And it's kind of the same thing defensively, when we talk about, you mentioned Chase Meidroth. He's played some shortstop as an amateur. He played third base at Coastal. He played more second base this year. And he's really a second baseman. His arm's average. And because he's kind of fringy quickness, if he's on the left side of the infield, he's got to get the balls quick and get rid of them quick to have a chance to make a difficult play. I don't even really think he's a great utility profile, because I just don't think it works as well on the infield. But I could see him being he's got hitting ability. He's got moxie. I could see him being an everyday player. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star, and I'm not saying he's going to bat, one or two in your lineup. But he just – everybody loves the way that guy plays. He constantly hustles. And, I do respect Chase Meidroth. But I actually – and it's funny because I think early in the season when Chase was playing well, I remember hearing on a radio show, I won't even name the host, he's like, Chase Meidroth, this guy's the future of the White Sox, future all-star. And I'm like – Chase Meidroth? No, he's not. And he's kind of has those same defensive limitations. I think he's a little bit better. He's got better arm than Sam, but he also needs to be playing second. He's not really a shortstop or third baseman, and he's not really that perfect utility guy. What I'm getting at is I think he and Sam Antonacci are cut from the same cloth. I will take the left-handed hitter, Sam Antonacci, over Chase Meidroth. So I could see, maybe you have kind of like a offense/contact-minded platoon eventually, and they also kind of share utility duties, at least early on when the White Sox are still rebuilding, even though they're not a perfect utility profile. But he's the type of player you watch. He grows on you. It's funny because I'm a big George Walkow fan. I'm fascinated by George Walkow, and he's only 19 years old. And I know he strikes out and he hit 223, but the guy's got monster power, and the guy should have been a freshman in college this year. So anyway, that's the big dilemma when you're doing the White Sox rankings. I know it wasn't midseason, and it will be again when we do them again this spring. Who do you take? You take George Walkow, who's got this massive ceiling, but a lot of risk. Or you take Sam Antonacci, who's got this super high floor, but, not a high ceiling. And I have them back to back. When we did it midseason, Walkow was 10, Antonacci was 11. And You could that's glass half full, glass half empty. You could argue that however you want, but I suspect I might have to put, even though I do have great affection for what George Wolkow can become, and Sam Antonacci's 3 years older than him. I probably will push Antonacci ahead of Wolkow when I do the list the next time.
Okay.
Like where would you put him?
I don't know what to make of Sam Antonacci. The way that you describe him, I feel a lot better about his chances, and I'm wondering if he does make it to Charlotte this year and he hits well at Charlotte, and if Chase Mydroth is struggling and he's got an OPS that starts with a six, are James Fegan, Jim Marlis, and I, are we going to have debates of should the White Sox call up Sam Antonacci and send Chase Mydroth back to AAA to work on stuff? So that's kind of my thinking, and then I guess I'll reserve judgment until I see how Antonacci's game translates to the majors. But with Mydroth, yeah, he had a good couple weeks, and I would feel pretty good about him, and I liked him at shortstop better than everybody else until Colson Montgomery came, and then Colson Montgomery's hitting home runs, and it's like that's a building block. Like Chase Mydroth might
Yeah.
be a better version of Nick Madrigal, and we learned
He's
that
a
Nick
complimentary
Madrigal didn't have
player.
staying power.
Yeah. He's a complimentary player on a good team.
Yeah.
And then, like, he's not a bad player. I don't even mean to sound like I was dumping on him, but like your Sam Antonacci Chase Mydroth parallel is very good because both those guys are excellent at putting the bat in the ball. But we saw it when Chase played every day in the big leagues last year. He didn't walk as much as he did in the minors because, again, you aren't, like, if you're a big league player and you get 450 at bats in a season like Chase did last year, like you're doing something right. I
Yeah.
mean, you're talented, but like, Chase Mydroth, his last year in the minors, I can't remember if he led the minors in walks, but he walked 105 times playing 122 games.
Wow.
He played the exact same amount of games for the White Sox last year, and he walked 45 times. He struck out the same amount. It was 71, 72 times. Like, he puts the bat on the ball, and I think he's got a little bit more pop. Like, I'd probably go. Maybe a little, probably go 40 power on him, 35 on Antonacci, like on the
Wow.
2080 scouting scale. And that might be slightly generous on both. Like, if you were tougher, you might go 35, 30, whatever. But what I was going to say is, you just get to the point in the big leagues where, okay, I'm on the count 3-0 to Chase Mydroth. Well, he's not going to hit a home run. He's probably not really going to hit a double. He's not like this speedster. He stole a few bases, kind of like, I think Antonacci's got more savvy stealing bases than Chase Mydroth, but like, neither one's a big runner. It's like, okay, 3-0, I'm exaggerating. Like, I'll put the ball on the tee. He can put the ball in play because, like, 99% of the time, the worst thing he can do is hit a single, and that's the same as walking him. And so those guys, their walk totals just don't maintain.
Now, from a prospect standpoint, the recent Rule 5 protection deadline was this past week, podcast listeners. We talked about that quite a bit in our previous episode. Jim, the only White Sox top 30 prospect on your list that was protected by the White Sox is pitcher Tanner McDougal, added to the 40-man roster. He ranks seventh in your current White Sox top 30. I shared with you the current White Sox outfield configuration when we talked about Brayden Montgomery. When you look at the White Sox starting rotation right now, it is Shane Smith, Davis Martin, Sean Burke. That's it. Maybe you could convince yourself to throw Jonathan Cannon out there, but the White Sox are not that confident anymore in Jonathan Cannon's ability to start games. So, same conversation with Brayden Montgomery, but this time with Tanner McDougal. Could we see Tanner McDougal make some appearances with the White Sox in 2026?
Yeah, I think we will. He got to Double A, spent half something there. So, like, I think we're all assuming he goes to Charlotte, right, to start the year. And again, I think they're in this moment where it's like they're trying to win this year. Like, we're gonna have Tanner McDougal up in May to, get the rotation so we can make the wild card. And I think you just let him pitch, and he'll tell you when he's ready. Now, I do think, like, more so with pitchers, you don't want to rush them, like. If he's not ready, I wouldn't for it. If he spent the whole year in AAA and you decided that's what was best, then that's what's best. But, we've talked about him in the past. He was kind of one of the poster boys for the first draft combine. Back then, they played multiple high school games. Now they just play one. But he pitched well, and there was this narrative. He kind of got out of sync in the spring, and I think he might have had the highest spin rates and carry at the combine. So he was an over slot guy. And they pitched briefly and then blew out in October at Tommy John, and then missed a year in 22. 23 is kind of the year where you ease him back, and then 24 you could see the stuff. He was still kind of on this year. The stuff took a leap. He's our guy. Like, I don't think it's ever going to be more probably fringy to average control. Maybe average control, probably fringy. But the stuff's really good. I mean, he could touch 100. He can really spin the ball. Curveball's better than the slider. Changeup needs some more work. So he's still a work in progress. He's going to be, I think he turns 23 right after the season starts. He came back in 23, but it's not like your full game. So he really lost roughly a season and a half. So I guess I'm just making up stats here. With baseball age, he'll be 21 and a half next year instead of 23. So he's still young, stuff to do. But yeah, no, he's really encouraging. An easy, no-brainer decision, because if you didn't protect him, he's getting popped.
Got it. Well, speaking of the Rule 5 draft, because of last year's success for the White Sox with the Rule 5 draft and selecting Shane Smith and being their all-star representative, and Shane Smith had a very good year for the White Sox. And then when the White Sox acquired Mike Vassell, I didn't think they thought they were going to get 100 innings out of Mike Vassell out of the bullpen. We got this fan question from Andrew Siegel, and because we already talked about the outfield situation, Andrew's asking you, Jim, the White Sox need outfielders. Are there any outfield prospects they could target in the Rule 5 draft?
Well, as you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Rule 5 draft. When it comes to Rule 5, I'm the polar opposite of Baseball America's J.J. Cooper. The tricky thing with position players with 5 draft, with pitchers, you always have guys who are either, like his stuff's very mediocre, but he gets results. We're not sure what to make of that guy. There's a bunch of those guys available. And then there's like, oh, this guy's got a great arm, but it doesn't know where he's going. You know, and it's like, he's not ready for the big leagues. Yeah. But you can always find kind of pitchers you could kind of talk yourself into. Plus with a 13 man pitching staff, you can find a way to get even a pitcher who's not close to being ready for the big leagues, 50, 60 innings, no problem. Yeah. More than that, especially if you're not a good team, the hitters are tougher. Because most of the poolsier hitters who are available are guys who are like, you know, maybe signed 16 years old out of a Latin American, you know, country, and they haven't played above A ball. They're not close to ready, and putting them in the big leagues and giving them 150 at bats would be terrible for their development. So there usually are not ready-made big league regulars that you could just grab and pluck and put in your lineup. Like it's usually flawed players or guys who aren't ready. But in the playing along with this exercise, like, I don't know. Like, I saw this guy in the Arizona Fall League, Wilfredo Antunes with the Guardians. And he's interesting. He was signed in 2019. He got to Double A this year. He had 18 homers, 16 steals. He's got raw power. You know, if you like him, you could go 55 speed, 55 arm strength. He's interesting. But he hasn't played a ton in Double A. And then I saw him in the fall league, and I'm not a performance scout, but I saw him play 2 games, and he homered in both games. And I was like, yeah, you know, like, I do our Guardians list. So I was like, this guy's always interested me. And then he had shoulder tendonitis. He never played again. So he's only played 31 games in Double A. So like, if you're the White Sox, like, you obviously can give at bat, especially where they are and what you brought up as the state of their system. Or is there state of their outfield? Like, they can obviously give opportunity to players very easily. So, like, on one hand, you can say, yeah, Wilfredo Antunes is interesting. On the other hand, he's only had 30 games above high A ball. So, how ready is he? Like, right. Like, I'm not saying he's the guy, but like, they should definitely throw a couple Rule 5 darts and just see what happens. Like, it's easier to kind of like try to find pitchers and give them playing time. Because you know, you get this catch. Like, let's say you take Wilfredo Antunes. If he doesn't win a job, like if he doesn't win a job on merit, and then he makes the team, but you're not giving him at bats, he's not developed. Like, you just get stuck. Right. So that's the thing. Like, I saw, I think JJ had at his you know, baseball. Like, JJ's already done, and maybe I've missed one. He's done at least one Rule 5 preview already. Like, immediately after every particular roster, I think he had like a dozen guys. And he mentioned Andrew Pintar of the Marlins system. And like, Andrew Pintar, he could play big league center field right now. He could get the job done in center. Like, he's a good defender, but like, he hit 270 with 4 homers in AAA last year. I just don't see a whole lot of offensive ceiling there. And like you could get, to me, he'd be more of a placeholder. Like could he make a team? Yes, he spent a whole year in AAA. He's a good defender. He runs well enough. Like, but he's more that, I don't know, like fifth outfielder on a good team than like, oh, we project this guy. He's gonna be 25 next year. So I don't, if I had to guess, I'm gonna say I don't really see them addressing their outfield situation through the Rule 5 draft. It's just too hard. Like if there's a guy who's ready to play in the big leagues, like he can handle it and he's got the tools to be a regular, that guy's getting protected. Like the pitchers, like there's more, like I said, I described scenarios. Like Shane Murphy, like who the White Sox didn't protect. Like he had a great year, but it's not overwhelming stuff. Okay, we're not gonna protect him and we'll see what happens. A team that needs pitching, but like everybody has a guy like Shane Murphy. Like maybe not had the year that he had, but like you have guys like that. So like you feel a little bit more comfortable not protecting him. But yeah, I don't think they're gonna solve their outfield problem. I had not heard the Andrew Benintendi to DH thing. And so like that's pretty dire. I mean, at least they're not trying to win, but
It caught us by surprise.
well, maybe you see Kyle Teal play some outfield. If Andrew Benintendi's DHing, I feel like Teal and Caro are gonna like split catching, right? Like 50-50-ish. And so if you got Benintendi at DH, then maybe Kyle Teal does some running around left
We
field.
did see Corey Lee attempt to play left field for the White
Oh,
Sox.
he's better than that. He's better than that. Like I actually think, like you don't like Kyle. Like the White Sox talk about this too. Kyle's athletic enough that he hasn't been a catcher forever. Like he doesn't have as many catching reps as your typical 24-year-old catcher. I do think he'd be a prospect as a, like I think the offense is good enough where he'd be a prospect as a left fielder. And it's not like, oh, yeah, you have him stumble around and like fall down and catch an occasional. Like he's not Chase, he's not Corey Lee, he's not Eloy Jimenez. Like I think like they're not gonna make him a full-time outfielder, but I think if you did, he could be at least a fringy to average defender. I think he'd get the job done. So like maybe that's how they're gonna solve part of it.
We did get another question from John Strauss, and John is asking, with the glut of infielders, except for Colson Montgomery, you have a lot of out-of-option guys for the White Sox, which makes this roster construction even more interesting, Jim, because Lenine Sosa, Miguel Vargas, former top Rays prospect Curtis Meade, and Brian Ramos has been in the system for a long time. All four of these guys are out-of-options as they enter spring training. John's asking you, would you try to package a few of these guys for a more substantial first or third baseman?
I don't think you could package those guys. I just don't think you'd get much for them. I mean, it'd be great if you could put all four of them together and get somebody. Like, but I mean, I think he described the situation right. I mean, Colson Montgomery's your shortstop. If it were me, like I saw, like I always liked Miguel Vargas with the Dodgers, and I think it's hard to break into the big leagues. I think it's also hard when you're breaking into big leagues on a team that's losing 119 games or 121 games, what am I saying? And I think we even joked, I may have joked on podcasts, like it's, I actually, Miguel Vargas, there were more photos of him where it's just like he looked like the unhappiest player in the big leagues. I just got traded by a team that's about to win the World Series, and I'm here in this 121 loss wasteland, and this isn't fun. But we saw flashes from Miguel Vargas last year. So for me, honestly, I would play Miguel Vargas. I think these guys are out of options because they've been around for a while. I think you know what you have in them. Like Miguel Vargas, like this guy was one of the better hitters in the minor leagues at one point. He's got some power. We saw that hot streak from him last year at one point. To me, maybe I find out that he isn't what I think he is, but I'm playing Miguel Vargas every day next year to find out, is he my guy or is he not? So I know for 2027. I guess is Lenine Sosa, like I don't even know who's our projected first baseman right now.
Well, defensively, it should probably be Miguel Vargas, but if you move him over to third base, it does open up some spots, playing time for Lenine Sosa and Curtis Meade.
Yeah, so it's crazy because almost all these guys are right-hand hitters too, which isn't advantageous either. So I got to find out whether he's playing first or third. I got to find out what Miguel Vargas can do. Like, I need to know, are we keeping him for 27 or is that another guy we're gonna have to replace? I was a big Brian Ramos fan for a long time. I feel like Brian's kind of blown his opportunity, honestly. Like, you had some bad teams. You never took advantage. Like there was an opportunity to grab some playing time. He just has never done it. Like, so I don't, like, again, I mean, if I'm having to make decisions, like right now, like he's probably in AAA. And if somebody gets hurt and we get a chance, we'll see. But that guy's backslid the last couple of years.
And that process would have to put Ramos on waivers, right? Because he's out of options.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd be honest, like, is he really getting claimed?
Right. Well, that's a good point.
Maybe. Lenin Sosa, like, he's not one of those guys who's not really a utility man. He's a right-handed hitter. He's a right side infield guy. Maybe he's my utility guy. And I was gonna say, Curtis Meade, like, I'll admit, when we had him, I think he was like 30 or something on our top 100 at one point in the race system. I always thought he was kind of limited, athletic, and defensively. So I like the bat, but like it's kind of bat only. But it's kind of the same thing with Curtis Meade. Like, I want to know what he is. So I would probably, you're not gonna be able to package those guys. I think you're probably gonna, like, I'm playing Vargas. I mean, Meade's had 488 at bats, but spread over 3 years. Wasn't very good with the White Sox. It's not good. I don't know what to do with these guys. I'm playing Miguel Vargas. Sosa's getting at bats for now. Curtis Meade, I guess I give him another opportunity to show what he can do, but like to me, he's more of a first baseman DH and he's right-handed. So that's a tough
Yeah.
profile. And he hasn't hit. So like I guess Meade and Ramos, I'd like to get at bats, but I guess I'm giving them to Vargas and Sosa at the beginning. And no, you're not really going to be able to trade any of those guys for anything. I'm not even clear that they get claimed on waivers if you waive them. So, yeah, I think that situation's going to need some more time to resolve itself. I mean, I do think, I mean, looking down the road, Caleb Bonnemer's
Yeah.
coming, Billy Carlson's coming. But, and then you do have, I mean, I know you mentioned him as an outfielder because the outfield situation is dire. I mean, I kind of like Brooks Baldwin a little bit. Like, I'd rather have him bouncing around my infield as kind of a utility guy than playing right field for me.
He does not look good in the
So maybe
outfield. He
he's
doesn't
in.
look comfortable in the outfield.
Yeah. So, and then he struggled last year too. But yeah, I just think the problem is, like, all those guys have kind of the same profile. Like, Brian Ramos is probably the best defender at third. Well, he is the best defender at third. So maybe if he gets off to a good start, you put him at third and you put Vargas at first. Like, to me, the one guy I'm playing every day, at least going into the year, is Vargas. And then I guess I just got to see how these other guys shake out. I mean, Ramos is younger, but they're all like right-handed hitters that I don't really know what to do with.
Yeah, and Lenin Sosa led the team in home runs, but 100 weighted
How
runs
many
create a
was that?
plus. So he's a league average hitter.
I mean, yeah, which, I mean, look, I mean, there's something there. It's just the problem
He's
is
awful at defense.
he's like, yeah, and he's a right-handed hitter, so it's a tough profile. But like, I mean, if you were trying to win the most games right now, well, maybe not defensively, but I feel like he put Miguel Vargas at third and Lenin Sosa at first. Based on the current construction of the roster, unless I don't know, you put Brooks Baldwin at third and Miguel Vargas at first to have better defense, and then bounce Sosa around. But yeah, they're still I like the like I think you can see some signs of encouragement and like okay, we're putting some building blocks into place, but there's still work to be done.
And our final question comes from Trooper Galactus, and he's asking, Jim, outside of George Welkow, which you are a fan, and Brayden Montgomery, are there any other position players within the White Sox system who have quote unquote superstar upside? So think 5 WAR or better.
Well, we're just going pure ceiling. I mean, you could dream on a lot of guys. And look, I like George Walkow. I would have to temper my thoughts that he's going to be a superstar. Like, he's just so young. Like, if we're just saying five WAR players, sure. Like, so, you know, he mentioned Brandon Montgomery and George. I mean, George Walkow, if he hits this, it could be a 40 home run guy. Like,
yeah.
Will he get there? I don't know. Well, you know, you could dream on some other guys. I mean, it's weird saying this with a guy where everybody's like, he needs to kind of adjust his swing and approach, but it's easy. Like Billy Carlson, guys are saying, is the best defensive shortstop they've ever seen. And he's got 20 homer power. So if Billy Carlson hits 20 homers and wins a gold glove at short, that's a five WAR player.
Yeah.
So like he could.
Is Dansby Swanson a fair comp for Billy Carlson? Like that's a type of player he could develop into.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And I mean, Dansby's had a nice career, and Dansby was one of my favorite college players there. But like, if you want to feel even better about Billy Carlson, like coming out of high school, like I had a good friend of mine really had Georgia as an area. I can say this, this is not a secret anymore. Alan Matthews, I worked with Baseball America, now cross checks with the Dodgers. He had Dansby Swanson as a second rounder out of high school. He just wasn't signable. But I think the consensus was Dansby was kind of in that third to fifth round range, and Billy Carlson was first rounder. So like at the same stage, Billy Carlson was a tier above Dansby Swanson. Like if you want to dream. So there's one. I'd say we could play a ceiling game with a few guys like Cale Bonnemer, and I'll admit Cale Bonnemer better than I thought he was, better hitter than I thought he was. He was very streaky on the showcase circuit, and even guys who liked him more than I did were everybody. I don't know. He's not going to be the shortstop of the White Sox with Billy Carlson coming. If Billy Carlson hits, but Caleb Bonnemer was a lot better at shortstop than people thought he was. Like I had pro scouts be like, or guys who were like assistant scouting managers tell me, man, like I did not realize he was going to be this good defensively. So like you could see a scenario where Caleb Bonnemer, I don't know, hits 280 with 25 homers and plays quality third base. That might be a five WAR player. The other guy I'd throw out there, you know, Jane Fowski can really, really hit. So like, again, we're talking ceiling. I'm not saying all these guys are going to do this, but right. Like, what if Jane Fowski hits 300 with 25 homers and like, he's pretty athletic and he's an asset in the outfield. He might get to five WAR as well. So again, we're talking about ceilings. So like not everybody's going to hit your ceiling, but I think all those guys could be, you know, a five WAR type of player. Those guys could all be really good. Like if you, scanning down the rest of their list, then they have, I think this would be true of any organization. They have guys you like, but it's more floor guys or guys who can do a couple things well. Like, you know, we talked about Sam Antonacci. I don't think Sam Antonacci is going to be a five WAR player. Like, I think he's going to hit and he'll be a scrappy dude and, you know, he'll play hard every day, but he's probably not getting to five WAR. But then if we were ranking this the other way, like, okay, who's got the highest ceilings? I mean, I'm sorry, highest floors in the system. I'd go Montgomery one, but I think you go Sam Antonacci would have the second highest floor in the system right now.
So there are some major leaguers, but it does sound like the White Sox right now in their top 30 have a good mix of, there are some guys you can dream on that could be stars, but every team also needs those high floor guys like Sam Antonacci. And it sounds like the White Sox have a good mixture right now.
It's funny. If they were a contender, like I actually do think, not that you're going to get, you know, the reverse, like you're not getting Garrett Crochet for Sam Antonacci as the headliner.
Right.
Everybody kind of loves Sam Antonacci when I talk to other teams for what he is. Like, if the White Sox are like, you know what, we want to move Sam Antonacci, like there'd be teams won't take him off their hands. Like looking at their system as a whole, I do like the top, like, and this is considering who they graduated to the big leagues, because they graduated Teal and Kara and Mydroth and Shane Smith, who I underrated, and Mike Vassell, who I don't think I ever had on the list, and Chase Mydroth, if I didn't mention. They graduate a lot of guys. I do feel like their top 10 or 11 guys on our list, that's a really solid, good group of 10 or 11 players. Like, I feel even better about Hagen Smith after the fall league. I think, you know, well, the key, you know, as they go forward, I think is to improve the guys behind them. I like, they're not I wouldn't call them top heavy, like say the Cubs system was, where it's like got all these top 100 prospects and it kind of falls off pretty quickly. I wouldn't say they're that top heavy, but I do think the top 10 is very representative, and it's like improving the quality of the guys behind them, because they have so many pitchers hurt this year, which, like you almost can't do something about, like it's like pitchers get hurt, but like that's the key. But I like the guys that like Billy Carlson's interesting. Jane Fowski's interesting. I mean, I'm surprised nobody asked us a question to identify who's the next White Sox area code guy that they're going to draft next year. But you know what the answer to that has to
Landon
be, right? Landon Tomy.
Tomy.
Like, I was joking with somebody because we're working on draft stuff. And I said to somebody, and they're like, I was about to say the same thing. Like, do we just put Landon Tomy, mock, and put him to the White Sox, wherever the White Sox second pick is? Which I think
Yeah,
is
I mean,
probably
that's what
what,
I'm doing.
top pick of the second round. Landon Tomy is going to be a White Sox.
$3 million.
Yeah,
Second
that's what I
round.
mean. I almost feel like he should relocate to Indiana. That like would even bolster his chances, like slightly. Like maybe he moves over the border a little bit. But yeah. Anyway, we joke because Caleb Bonnemer. I was just looking at Caleb Bonnemer and Jaden Fowski, and was Noah Schultz a White Sox area code guy? He was, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just funny. Was Christian Apor?
Ooh, I have to look that up.
I wonder, because it was a Wisconsin guy. He might have
Yeah,
been.
he might have been. He might
And
have
Wilkow
been.
was. And Wilkow was too.
Yeah, and then because we were talking about Gavin Killian from
Yeah.
Tennessee, from Milton, Wisconsin. Yeah, he was on the White Sox area code. They got a type, guys. I keep saying this. You're gonna argue with me all draft season. I don't know who the White Sox are the number one overall pick. I don't know who they'll take, but I
Oh,
know who
you
they're
are.
taking
Well,
the second round.
no, I was gonna say if they win the lottery and get the number one overall pick, like things could change. But right now, if they win the lottery and get the number one overall pick, they're taking Rock Chalowski. Like he's the clear number one guy. In fact, here's what we could do: we could project shortstop because I like then things change. So I'm not saying, hey, this is locked in stone. It's not going to change. But right now, if they get a top three pick, which they're heavily favored to do. The three best prospects to me are fairly clear in that I'm looking as a Christian Apor, area code White Sox 2021. So that's six of their top 10 prospects were area code guys, which is hilarious. So we got Landon Tomy. I feel like we could almost like get like chisel and stone. Like we don't have to pencil Landon Tomy in. We're just make that pick. The only way they don't get Landon Tomy, it feels like, doesn't it, Josh, is if Landon Tomy plays his way higher than their pick. Like I just feel like he's
Yeah.
their guy. But anyway, I was starting to say before I got distracted looking up a poor, if they have a top three pick, the top three prospects to me are somewhat clear. It's Rock Chalowski at UCLA, the shortstop. It's Grady Emerson, the high school shortstop from Texas. And then it's Justin LeBron, the shortstop from the University of Alabama. So yeah, we could just say they're taking a shortstop with their first pick and they're taking Landon Tomy with their second pick. I haven't dug deep enough to see, like, is there who else is out there that could get in the third round that would have been on the area code team?
We got work to do though, because
We do.
it's a possibility.
Wait,
It
wait,
is a
wait, wait. Like
possibility.
Mike Shirley, I hope Mike Shirley's listening to this podcast because we've already like he could just worry about the third round down. Like we've got the first pick figured out. We narrowed it down to three, and we know who his second pick is. So now they can just focus on crushing rounds 3 through 20.
There you go. We already got it figured out. We've already spent 10 million of your bonus pool money.
But they're going to have a giant pool. Like, if they get the first
Yeah.
pick, we probably spent more than that. Because if they get the first pick, the first I the bonus, the pool, the numbers go up based on revenues. That first pick is going to be like $11.5, $12 million
Right.
by itself.
So
So
you
I think we
give
probably,
Rock 10.
well, we're going to try to give him nine. Maybe not,
Okay.
like maybe we'll give all the money for the first pick to Landon Tomy and Rock Chalowski. Maybe spend a little over, but still have our full pool plus the extra 5% to go after rounds 3 through 20.
Yeah, there we go. We already got your job done, Mike. So you can take it easy. Again, the
He just has
MLB
to,
draft.
he could focus on crushing rounds 3 through 20 now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, again, you can follow Jim on Twitter. He's at Jim Callis MLB. Of course, listen to their podcast along with Jonathan Mayo, the MLB Pipeline podcast. It is one of my weekly listens. I highly recommend it. Jim and Jonathan do an excellent job, and that show brings in some of the top prospects. If you're curious on how other systems are going, definitely subscribe to their podcast. And Jim, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. The Goldens behave, and look forward to chatting with you soon.
No, same to you, Josh.
That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. If you do check out our videos, please hit the subscribe button so you're notified of our new videos, and also give them a like. It helps a great deal. You can also follow us on social media. We're at Sox Machine on all the platforms. You can follow James Fegan at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. If you are on Blue Sky, we're simply at SoxMachine.com. James is JRFegan.SoxMachine.com. And I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. I already plugged our subscription, but again, after listening to this episode, and for those that are not subscribers at this moment, if you would like an opportunity to submit questions for future podcast guests, that's one of the many perks for our subscribers. Again, go to SoxMachine.com and sign up for either a monthly or annual subscription. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.